get started with tonight's meeting. I ask that we all rise for the pledge of the flag.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Mr. Miller, please call the roll.
Mr. Callahan, Ms. Ramsey Smith.
Present.
Ms. Quintec.
Present.
Ms. Laird.
Present.
Ms. Leon.
Present.
Ms. Wilhelm.
Present.
And Mr. Cologne.
Present, thank you. We have a public hearing this evening. Let me just advise, Mr. Callahan will not be joining us this evening. Before we get started with our regular agenda, we're going to have a public hearing. To conduct a public hearing to review and to accept public comment on the proposed use of funds to be received under the 2023 Edward Byrne Memorial Justice Assistance Grant in the amount of $39,617. The public hearing is called to order concerning the JAG grant for the police department. In connection with this public hearing, a December 12, 2023 communication was read at the January 2, 2024 council meeting for Police Captain Michael Leeser. Captain Leeser explained that the $39,617 in grant money would be used to upgrade the department's computer hardware, software, and peripherals. I will start by recognizing a representative from the police department to talk about the grant application.
Thank you, Council Members, Deputy Chief Scott Meixel. As Council President Cologne stated, we use that money to pay for some computer equipment, vehicles,
mic's not working,
and the document management system.
Thank you.
This is a grant we get every year from the federal government. The allotment is sent by the federal government. This year, that allotment is $39,617. We have to make the application to specify what we're going to use the funds for. With your support, we'll finalize that application.
Any other comments or feedback from the administration regarding the JAG application? Thank you, Deputy Chief Mike. So I'll open it up to members of council for any questions or comments regarding the application. I'll start with Ms. Wilhelm.
Just a quick question. I was curious to know how the allotment is determined.
I believe the federal government bases it off of UCR now switching to NIBRS information, so coin information.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions or comments from members of council? Ms. Leon?
I saw that it said to replace laptop mounts for use in patrol fleet. I was wondering, is it just replacing previous ones, or is it going to be used in the cars that we're supposed to be seeing coming in? Or is this just the grant to cover those?
So both, in a sense, because as new cars come in, we replace the equipment with some equipment we can reuse. If we can't, we get new stuff. Now, with computers, they have a lifespan. So we're going to reuse them for so long. And since computers change, that means the mount changes. So when you buy one, you got to buy the mount for it to go with it to match.
Thank you.
Any other questions or comments? Ms. Laird?
Of course, the computers do get replaced. What is the average refresh cycle for your ruggedized laptops? Do you know?
Offhand, I would say roughly probably 5 to 6 years.
Any other questions or comments for Deputy Chief? Ms. Quintec?
I was just wondering how much this represents in the overall cost. Like, what is the overall cost for the project? If this kind of goes into, well, we can do this much, or is there more funding that's also being added to this?
So it's kind of a never-ending project because computers constantly need to be replaced. So with $39,000 out of that breakdown, I believe you have some more specifics. If not, the Howard EMS software is around $8,000. Laptops cost roughly, I believe, around $3,000. The mount is roughly the same. So I'm going to start breaking that down.
Any other questions or comments for Deputy Chief Meixel? Thank you.
Thank you.
I'll recognize the public if there's any comment for public comment. This is specifically about the Justice Assistance Grant. I'll start with the left and work around the room. Was there anyone to the left who wants to comment on the application for the JAG grant? I turn to the wide center. Mr. Zellmore?
Will this be a separate line item in the budget, or will it be co-mingled?
Mr. Zettelmore, I ask you, as per our rules, to address the chair.
Okay, sorry.
With your...
1304 East 6th Street, Bethlehem, I forgot that as well.
This is your time to address council.
Will this be a separate line item in the budget?
This is the time for your comment. I will say that question very well will come up when we vote on the resolution later today.
Okay, thank you.
Was there anyone else who wanted to make comments to council this evening? Well, that concludes our public comment. And there will be a proposed resolution on the February 6, 2024 meeting where we'll vote on it and have further time for discussion. The public hearing is adjourned. We're going to move on to our regular council agenda, approval of minutes for the January 2, 2024 council meeting. Any discussion on the minutes? I'm just going to make a quick note on the minutes because I know it's come up in conversation about how the minutes are drafted and what we approve. And Mr. Miller and I had a recent conversation about it. Minutes, and this is per Robert's rules, not my opinion. Robert's rules are very clear that minutes are supposed to be a record of what was done at an official meeting, not what was said at an official meeting. So the minutes, while they're not a transcript of the meeting, they're not supposed to be a transcript of the meeting. They're supposed to capture what the official actions were and what was done at the meeting. So I just want to make that a point of clarity, because I know it has been discussed, but I think it bears mentioning before we approve these minutes or any further minutes. So that being said, any comments on the minutes from the January 2nd meeting? The minutes stand approved. Moving on to public comment. As is custom, our first public comment will be on anything that council is not voting on this evening, with a 5-minute time limit. For our local and global YouTube audience, if you start the meeting after 7 p.m., feel free to scroll to the live section of the meeting if you want us to follow along in real time. We do have a handful of folks signed up to speak first, so I'll start with those who had signed up, starting with Mr. Zettelmore.
Thank you, Mr. President. Jeffrey R. Zettelmore, 1304 East 6th Street in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. I come to council tonight to speak the words of a very great man who we celebrated his birthday yesterday. I would like to leave you with some thoughts that he expressed during many of his speeches throughout the nation. He once said that if I cannot do great things, I can do small things in a great way. He also said it's always good to make a difference wherever you live. He stressed the differences of us, but he also stressed that we are all together. And he once said we must be able to transform the dangling discords of our nation into a beautiful symphony of brotherhood. And I point that out in reference to the city seal, that the transformation is religious, the symphony is music, and the dangling is the exercise that we get in our recreation. So 3 points of our star are covered by his words. I would also note the words of somebody that was very important in my life in reading her words, and that was somebody that suffered with multiple disabilities. And she said, if I cannot do one thing good by myself, we can do many things greatly. In viewing council's last meeting, I know there may be some discord amongst you folks, and that's good in a democracy because that's how we get ideas out to the floor. But I hope we can work for the common good of both of our community, our state, and our nation. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Zettelmore. Our next speaker signed up is Mary Jo McCool.
Mary Jo McCool, 449 Grandview Boulevard. I attended my first HARB meeting. It was quite an experience. I was pleased that the board rejected both plans. I researched the former Hess's parking deck construction and completion spanned February to November of 1969. The parking project spent $1.8 million to make repairs and renovations. It is now completely structurally sound. I wonder again if, with proper maintenance, the Walnut Street garage might be still viable. At the HARB meeting, one of the reasons the plans failed was that it was in direct violation of height restrictions of HARB and one of the Federal Department of Interior Code. Voting to overrule the HARP decision could put the city in a potentially legal battle. Last meeting, I stated the difference between hearing and listening. Listening requires a shift in priorities. It requires us to stop what we are doing, turn in the direction of the person speaking, and give them our full attention. Another name for this action is respect. Just as cell phones are a useful tool, they can also be a source of distraction. I wonder if this body would ban cell phone use in this chamber. Residents have stated their concerns to this governing body. Citizens wait, if able, until after the meeting to speak to specific departments. Sadly, most are still unresolved. I strongly urge this body to put these issues on the council agenda and bring all parties to the table and find solutions to them. The mayor and council are to represent all citizens and issues, not merely those deemed relevant. 4 days after the last meeting, I received a letter from a resident who commended me for speaking out, as I often do, and thanked me for my comments against the tax and sewer fee increases. Last month, the city hired an outside contractor to install an additional storm drain at the southwest corner of Grandview Boulevard and Ritter Street. We residents are grateful for this. There is still a flaw at this intersection. With that recent snow and subsequent rain, the flooding continues, only this time it ran 8 feet up the sidewalk. The correct solution is to replace the entire length of the 4-foot diameter pipe and correctly reconstruct Grandview Boulevard to remove the huge hump along Grandview Boulevard. Plowing this and clearing the city streets can be a daunting task. My neighbors and I appreciate the effort made. We do have one request. The property directly behind our homes is currently vacant. Ritter and Bascom Streets are the sole access to those homes with garages, and even with the development of the vacant property, will still be our only for our access. Why then do the plowing crews not turn their plows to push the snow towards the vacant property site? Every time they plow everyone's driveways shut. This last time I was stuck with three to four foot high boulders of snow to move, so I have access to my garage. I have in the past caught up with the plow driver and tried to reason with him, only to have him say they can't turn their plows. If this is true, time for an upgrade. I've given each city council member and the mayor an invitation to attend a town hall meeting on January 27th at the Borderline Restaurant on Pennsylvania Avenue in the Lehigh Shopping Center. It will begin around 9 a.m., come for breakfast, coffee, or just to listen to citizens' concerns. My goal is to have a dialogue between citizens and our government officials. Council meetings, I and others feel we do not fully address, our concerns. Please try to attend. And lastly, I just want to leave this body with something to contemplate. Men of genius are admired. Men of wealth are envied. Men of power are feared. But only men of character are trusted. Zig Ziglar, adapt to suit your own preference.
Speaker signed up this evening is Mr. Mark Will Weber.
Mark Will Weber, 66 West Elizabeth Avenue. I'm here representing the direct our Facebook page that's pursuing clarity and accountability from the Water Department, Sewer Department, Water Department, both. I just want to comment on a few things that the director has said over the last several months. He was speaking about the low delinquency rate in the city. I think he put it at 5% or under, which may or may not be true. We don't know because we nobody really gets to look at what goes on. But I think he attributed it to, somehow to one case. I think he said something like the delinquency rate is so low because, you know, Bethlehem's a fairly affluent place to live, et cetera, something like that. Now, I want to say the delinquency rate is low because they employ threats from the get-go. That's why it's low. It has nothing to do with how much money people might have or some weird sense of civic duty that when they find you, you automatically want to pay up cheerfully. When we were contesting our situation, we were already getting bills that with a penalty fee attached to it. We had to call up and go, whoa, wait a minute, we're contesting this. And after several phone calls, they eventually got back and said, oh yeah, we didn't mean to send you that. But right away, they begin to threaten the citizen consumer with penalty rates. The director, I think, rather nonchalantly referred to in extreme cases, they'll get a bill collector. It's always a pleasant thing to go through, especially when you just got a huge bill that maybe you can't pay. You'd love to come home and have that guy knocking on your door. So there's that. And that's still kid glove stuff. When water and sewer bureaucracies want to really roll, they can threaten to turn off your water. They can threaten to put a lien against your property. And this happens. I didn't know that it happened until I started this webpage and started to cruise around the country and read various places. There's a family in DeKalb County, Georgia right now with a $54,000 lien against their property from unpaid water bills. It's sort of in a catch-22. They can't pay the bill because they can't sell the property until they pay the bill. But anyway, so it can get rather extreme. Remember when you were a kid and you went to the circus and you saw a lion jump through a hoop of fire and you went, wow, that's pretty cool. I wonder how they do that. And you're 8 or 9 years old and you don't know any better, but the way they get the lion to jump through is they threaten them, you know, they whips and electric cattle prods and all sorts of nice things like that. And this is sort of the bureaucratic version of that. So it's, I call it bureaucratic waterboarding because they just keep up in the ante until you pay up. Along similar lines, the director has said, touted the willingness of the department to work with people, which certainly wasn't our experience. But and what he really means is it boils down as they'll cheerfully put you on a payment plan. That's about their willingness to work with you. It's like the villain in Merchant of Venice. If you can't get your pound of flesh, maybe you can get 4 ounces at a time over several quarters and get your money that way. If that's what passes for compassion from the city, that's a pretty low bar. I think a wounded field mouse could jump over that bar. Okay? So that's really, if you can't pay, and 47% of Americans, according to some polls, don't have $500 for an emergency. So if they got the bill that I got, they'd have to go on the payment plan. So it's not a pleasant experience to go through. I don't want this illusion that it's like people can pay up and because Bethlehem's so affluent. It might be when you're in Rosemont or the historic section or Edge of Borough, but we all know there's places in the city that aren't that affluent, okay? So a $400 or $500 bill out of nowhere can bring you precariously close to the poverty line if you're not already there. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Woolweber. Our next speaker is Megan Lysonski. My apologies. Say again?
Lysowski.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Megan Lysowski. I live at 650 East 4th Street. I'm here today to talk about the Walnut Street Garage Project and something that I haven't heard really been talking about. Building parking is very expensive. It's something we don't think about because it's in our daily landscape. But to build a structured parking garage per space, that can cost can be between $10,000 to $100,000. That's a huge range. I took a look at our recent garages, Polk Street and New Street. They ran around $22 million, around $21 million, and I divided it by the spaces and came out with we are spending about $32,000 per parking space. The parking experts call them parking stalls, but that just makes me think of horses, so I'm going to call them spaces. So using that metric of $32,000 per parking space, I wanted to just shed some quick back-of-the-napkin numbers. If we rebuild the garage, as some people are asking, with the full 770 spaces, we're going to be spending about $25 million. If we build it with what the parking authority is proposing, the one that they really like, proposal one, it'll be about $19 million. Proposal 2, which knocks off half a level, will be about $17 million. These are just estimates based on what I've seen in other garages. I think the key that I want to take away is the parking garage, the parking authority has a great plan to use our public dollars wisely. By providing either Proposition 1 with 590 spaces or Proposition 2 with 530 spaces, we're going to meet our parking demand. And we'll make room for more housing. If we build the garage as it is, we're going to spend more money and we're not going to make any more housing available. So later when this project comes before you, I ask you to just think a little bit about the cost and what we want to prioritize in our city. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Our next speaker is Frank Feliciotto. And again, I apologize if I'm mispronouncing that.
Good evening, President Colon and honorable City Council members. My name is Frank Feliciotto, and I reside at 323 Center Street within the Historic District. I am a former executive from Olympus America, Inc., headquartered in Center Valley, Pennsylvania, and recently retired after a 25-year career in the medical division. I have no conflicts of interest to divulge. I stand before you as a very proud resident of this community, and quite disturbed about the past and recent issues related to the replacement Walnut Street garage. My pride is so much greater than the short time I've resided here, which is just over 1 year. In my opinion, and in that of most everyone to whom I've spoken, there is no doubt that the now decommissioned garage must be replaced. However, doing so with thoughtful consideration appears to be cluttered by several opposing interests. In my analysis, there are two fundamental factors that are key to the design and plan. They are architectural appropriateness and adequacy of parking. Both of these factors are being inextricably influenced by one flawed decision, and that is the reduction in footprint of the replacement garage to 58% of its original footprint. As a consequence of this singular decision, a requirement is imposed for the structure to be taller in order to provide for adequate public and permit parking. And as we have seen in submissions 1A and 1B by the BPA, this will still result in a significant reduction in available parking spaces. I refer to this type of decision as lose-lose. The record for the January 3rd, 2024 hard meeting should show two petitions, one for residents and one for businesses. I bring this to your attention because I personally championed both and met with over 100 individuals to get their feedback and obtain their signatures. I received 75 signatures from residents who are displeased with the plans for the new garage with respect to its height. Additionally, 34 businesses located on Main, Broad, Gitter, and Walnut Streets expressed serious concern about the negative effect on sufficient parking, all of whom signed the petition. Most all businesses indicated that additional parking is needed, echoing concerns voiced by their customers. I understand that HARB's purview is limited to the historic and architectural aspects of structures within the district, but we must accept that the parking dynamics are very entangled and can't simply be ignored. Park voted down both submissions 1A and 1B in an effort to preserve the integrity of our historic district. We all expect that sometime in 2024, Moravia and Bethlehem will be awarded a World Heritage designation. This distinction offers the potential for significant increased tourism that will amplify the demand for parking, which is already burdened. So the decision is now solely in your hands. I trust that you will take this decision under serious consideration and work collaboratively with all stakeholders to define a solution that respects our heritage while providing for the future needs of our community. It is difficult for me to even imagine how it could be possible for you as elected officials of Bethlehem City Council to ignore this community feedback and overrule the recommendation that Harvest made. Therefore, an obvious solution is to replace in kind, utilizing the original footprint, garage footprint, and relocate the white box that we are being told is undefined to an alternate location where more rigorous restrictions will not apply. While the BPA proposal may appear to many as a small change and one that addresses the need for affordable housing, it does so at the expense of architectural preservation, something that can never be restored. Other options do exist, and I challenge you to make it a win-win for Bethlehem. With the utmost respect of your positions in city government, I thank you for giving me and others the opportunity to be heard. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Feliciato. That exhausts our list of everyone who had signed up for the first courtesy of the floor. So as is custom, I'll go around the room. If there's anyone else who wanted to make comment on anything we're not voting on this evening, I'll start to the left. Is there anyone who wants to make comment? Mr. Antalix.
Stephen Antalix, 77 Ridge. Once upon a time, there was a council member who was very intimidating, overbearing, and used power to further their end to the point where they intimidated the director of public parks and housing and public parks and properties to give them free utilities as opposed to all other nonprofits. They also intimidated someone in City Hall to eliminate secretly a debt of $121,000. No one seemed to be able to stand up to this person because of their unwritten power and their sense of intimidation and fear of them. Except one person. And that person was the solicitor for counsel. And I recall witnessing a number of very heated exchanges between the solicitor and the council member. But the solicitor stood their ground to the point where, in total frustration and anger, the council member conspired to have that person removed. And in the vote against this solicitor, two council members, one was only elected 1 month and one was only appointed 1 week before they were asked to vote. And in the vote they said they would recuse themselves because they didn't know the person, they wanted to deprive them of a livelihood, at which point the member of council became totally irate and almost screaming, demanded that those council members vote. All other council members didn't say a word. It was out to this intimidation. And both council members changed their recusal vote to vote against the solicitor. And there's a message there. So the city lost a very capable, highly respected solicitor. Think about that.
Thank you, Mr. Antalis.
There's more to come on that.
Is there anyone else in the center who wanted to make comment on anything not being voted on this evening? I turn to the right. All right, that concludes our first public comment. We're going to continue on to second public comment. This is for any items that are on the agenda tonight. We had one person previously signed up, Megan Lysowski.
I'm Megan Lysowski, 650 East North Street. I'm here to talk about, under the agenda, 6H, Director of Public Works and City Engineer, 2024-5 East Broad Street Improvement Designs. I support traffic and planning designs contract with East Broad Street Improvement. TPD is their acronym. TPD put together the Activate Broad Street Plan in 2021. I would just like to use this time to recommend that TPD make some modifications to the intersection. Instead of having a curb that is attached to the curb, let there be a bump out so that a floating curb bump out so that in the future we can add a bike lane. TPD is a great contract for the project. They're going to do a great job. They're also NACJO certified in these different treatments that are making cities greater across the U.S. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. So that was our only person signed up. Again, I'll go around the room. This is for anything we're voting on tonight. Is there anyone who wanted to make comment to the left? Mr. Antalis.
Stephen Antalis, 77 Ridge. I'd like to bring your attention to resolution 10I, appointment of a solicitor for counsel. First, I have no problem with the appointment. What I do have a problem with is the process. Historically, this city and this chamber at that people at that table would have people come before at this podium and express their qualifications for various positions. And I recall people coming before this podium for the position of council solicitor. Very transparent, very open. And after each person spoke, President Council then said, we will have an executive session to make a decision. Good government, transparency, involving the public. But, as I understand it, there's no announcement or publication of this current opening. There's no executive session. But I see there'll be a vote tonight to make an approve an appointment. What's going on? How did this happen? I spoke earlier of a very qualified solicitor. I called the gentleman, and he said he heard nothing about it or was contacted. What's the urgency? Could not this procedure, which is normal to City of Bethlehem, again be used to choose a solicitor? Not this, how did it happen? Who knew? I'm shocked. I'm really shocked. Because this highly qualified person was not considered. If there's an urgency for a legal decision, council could turn to the city and ask the solicitor, who was the council solicitor at one time. The two seemed to get along very well. There's a buddy-buddy relationship between council and administration anyway. So why not wait? Something very, very troublesome is here. This totally smacks of secret government, which is abhorrible. And it's happened here. Shame.
Thank you, Mr. Antalis. Is there anyone else to the center who wanted to make comment on anything that we're voting on this evening? I turn to the right. Well, that concludes our... This is for anything being voted on this evening, sir.
Oh, this is...
We already went through the first
courtesy of support. This is for items you're voting on under item 6, right? You have 9 communications. Which will be voted on under number 10?
Sir, if you don't mind coming to the lectern just so I could hear you.
Sure.
I don't
right.
mean to have you yell across the room. So we're on, if it's something that we're going to be voting on tonight, by all means.
All right, so under communications, you have 9 items. 4 of them, or maybe 5, relate to the Water and Sewer Authority. And I just hope that someone on City Council is going to look into the third water main break on the unit block of East Market in the past 10 years. It's led to the closing of the historic Trinity Episcopal Church at 44 East Market. I'm not sure why the water mains keep breaking, but I hope it does not become an epidemic across the city, because broken water mains deny the people the service they pay for and also cause grievous damage to homes and buildings. So I just hope that someone in the City Council is going to look into that, since you keep voting on things for the Water and Sewer Authority. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Was there anyone else to the right who wants to make comment on anything we're voting on this evening? That will conclude our second public comment. Mr. Antalis, we've already moved on to the next speaker. You know it's not custom for us to go backwards, sir.
I'm asking to table the resolution.
Understood. Understood. We're going to move on to old business. Any old business from members of council? Seeing none, we're going to move on to communications. Communication 6A.
A December 18th, 2023 memorandum with proposed resolution from Fire Chief Warren Aki requesting the destruction of records from his department. Chief Aki has reviewed the Municipal Records Retention Act, and the records listed on the exhibit accompanying the memo fall within the categories where destruction is permitted.
And a resolution will be placed on February 6, 2024, City Council agenda. Communication 6B.
January 16, 2024 memorandum with an attached resolution from Edward Boscola, Director of Water and Sewer Resources. Mr. Boscola recommends a contract with SC Engineers Incorporated of Allentown to perform annual consulting services at the wastewater treatment plant. The contract will run from January 1st, 2024 through December 31st, 2024, and the amount is not to exceed $20,000. There are 4 additional annual renewal options, each at up to $20,000.
And resolution 10A is on the agenda.
Communication 6C.
January 16, 2024, memorandum with attached resolution from Edward Buscola, Director of Water and Sewer Resources. Mr. Buscola recommends a contract with Gannett Fleming Valuation and Rate Consultants LLC of Harrisburg to perform an update of the capital value and depreciation of the city's water system. Contract will run from the notice to proceed until April 15, 2024. Cost will be $7,500. There are four additional annual renewals at $7,500 each.
And resolution 10B is on the agenda tonight. Communication 6D.
A January 16, 2024 memorandum with attached resolution from Edward Buscola, Director of Water and Sewer Resources. Mr. Buscola recommends a contract with Colliers Engineering and Design Incorporated of Allentown to perform GIS utility data verification and mapping. Contract will run from the notice to proceed until December 31st, 2024. The total cost is $77,900. There are no renewals.
And resolution 10C is on the agenda. Communication 6E.
January 2nd, 2024 memorandum with an attached resolution from Business Administrator Eric Evans. Mr. Evans recommends a contract with KSA&D of Allentown to create two newsletters for the city in 2024. It's anticipated that advertising will pay for printing costs. However, the memo estimates an annual total mailing cost of $15,636. There are three renewals with the estimated annual mailing cost of $15,636.
And resolution 10D is on the agenda. Communication 6F.
A January 3rd, 2024 memorandum with an attached resolution from Michael Alcall, Director of Public Works. Mr. Alcall recommends a contract with LBL Engineering Group of Bethlehem to perform the Knox Seaway Trail Improvements Project Phase 2, including paving 3,000 feet of the recreational trail from Shanersville Road to Union Boulevard. The estimated cost is $88,802, and work is to be completed by December 31st, 2025. There are no renewals. LBL Engineering submitted the lowest responsible proposal among four firms.
And resolution 10E is on the agenda tonight. Communication 6G.
A January 8, 2024 memorandum with an attached resolution from Edward Buscola, Director of Water and Sewer Resources. Mr. Buscola recommends a contract with Dewey Engineering Incorporated of Bethlehem to provide professional engineering services to assist the city with replacement of the wastewater treatment plant's secondary digester gas cover, which has reached the end of its useful life. Contract will run through December 31st, 2024. The total cost is $37,500. There are no renewals.
And resolution 10F is on the agenda. Communication 6H.
The January 5th, 2024 memorandum with an attached resolution from Public Works Director Michael Alcall. Mr. Alcall recommends contract with Traffic Planning Design Incorporated of Pottstown to design improvements to East Broad Street, including Center Islands, curb bump outs, pedestrian refuge islands, ADA ramp upgrades, improved streetscapes, and lighting. Contract will run through December 31st, 2025. Total cost is $93,875. There are no renewals.
And resolution 10G is on the agenda tonight. And last communication 6I.
A January 10th, 2024 memorandum with an attached resolution from Edward Buscola, Director of Water and Sewer Resources. Mr. Buscola recommends a contract with Brendan Stanley Incorporated, doing business as BSI Electrical Contractors of Montgomeryville, to replace multiple aging electrical components and systems at the wastewater treatment plant. Substantial and final completion are expected by July 5, 2024. Total cost is $405,540. There are no renewals.
And resolution 10H is on the agenda. Moving on to reports, Mr. Miller, if you'll read our councilman appointment.
Councilman appointment, Benjamin Felser, Environmental Advisory Council. Resolution is sponsored by Ms. Leone and Ms. Quiatek.
Mr. Felser cannot be here this evening, but I just want to thank him for continuing to volunteer for our Environmental Advisory Council. He's someone who's been volunteering for a couple years, someone who brings a lot of knowledge professionally, given his educational background and his role as an educator over at Lehigh University, so I thank him for continuing to volunteer his time with the AC. Any other discussion? Ms. Wilhelm?
As you know, I proudly serve as the council liaison to the EAC, and so I really wanted to just underscore what you just said, President Colon. I've worked with Mr. Feltzer for the last 2 years, and you know from his resume that he's highly qualified, but he also provides excellent leadership support to the chair, Lynn Rothman, so I'm pleased to support his reappointment with my vote tonight.
Ms. Wilhelm, any other comments from members of council? Mr. Miller, please call the roll.
Ms. Kramsey-Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
Ms. Leon?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
And Mr. Colon?
Aye. Passes 6-0. Just a couple other points before I conclude my report this evening. As we turn over to a new council, and I welcome Mr. Callahan and Ms. Laird, just wanted to go over a couple points that, as I continue on as council president with appreciation, I do recognize there has been some conversations as it relates to council rules and Robert's Rules of Order. Anyone who has attended a meeting for the last 2 years now or observed me on council the last 8 or ever talked to me outside of council chambers, not always the most rigid with rules, and it's something that I try to keep the meetings loose as we run through them, but I will be mindful and cognizant of what our Robert's rules are that council has adopted, as well as our council rules. And just a couple that I wanted to go over with everyone as we move on with the new council. And there will be times that, if need be, I'll cite them as we come across them and things like that. And Robert's rules, for those who are not familiar, are simply the rules that outline how meetings are run. And moving on, and I'd like to think, as we continue on with council, that we can continue to follow the same standard that we've tried to as it relates to how we address those in front of us as a council, and also how the comments come to those up here on council. And some of our council rules that are different, that are typically not been enforced, have been council rules such as to speak more than 3 times on any single agenda item requires unanimous consent. Something I've never invoked. Honestly, I don't know how many times we've gotten there, though. I haven't been keeping score on that. But it's just something I ask everyone to be mindful of as we move through different agenda items, because even if it's not tonight, in the future, and then again in the future, and then again in the future, we're going to have agenda items that are going to be contentious votes, that are going to be split votes, with the exception of one new member of council. All of us have cast votes before. Sometimes we've been in majority, sometimes the minority of split votes. I hope we can continue to move on professionally and how we address each other and the work of council here in council chambers. I addressed it earlier during public comment that I remind everybody that anyone who's addressing, whether it's comments on agenda items or at the lectern, is always asked to address the chair of council or council as a whole, not to address individual members of council or other city administration or employees that are here, as public comment is exactly that, time for comment. I know it's not always the most immediate request that people are looking for, as we're hoping to engage a back and forth, but the rules are that our public comment is meant exactly for that, for comment. And this is custom and will remain custom. We've typically used our new business to address topics that come up or that we want to discuss amongst ourselves or with the administration. And again, I offer my thanks to everyone from the administration who's consistently here to answer questions as they come up. Robert's Rules also advise us to refrain from attaching motives to how we cast votes, and everyone is to be treated equally and fairly. And that's for all 7 members of council, really everybody in this room. I do my best to treat everyone with the same amount of respect, and in return I ask that we all treat each other with the same amount of respect. Moving forward, I will ask that, and I'll bring this up as we need to in the future, that when we get to certain agenda items, if there's ever going to be any motions, might not be tonight, but in the future, before you motion to table, to postpone, anything like that, I just ask that we're mindful to give every member of council an opportunity to speak on that particular agenda item and the question on the floor, because depending on the motion, it could end conversation if there's a second. And we were in a position in a previous meeting where that happened, and that goes to my next point, that we should really be confining our remarks to the questions that are on the floor
and then we handcuff each other, or can potentially, depending on motions that we make, before everyone has a chance to speak on council. See, there's just general things. Again, I recognize, am I the strictest as it relates to council rules and Robert's rules? I'll be the first to admit, not always, but that's not saying that I don't hear my colleagues or individuals that talk to me about it, and as it relates to how these meetings are run. I will say some of our council rules, just based on recent practice, need to be updated, and those updates will be forthcoming in the future. I thank everybody, and I look forward to another term with our new council. Before I conclude my remarks, I would say it's important to acknowledge the passing of a leader in our community, and that's Pastor Houghton Clennon, who we recently lost. And I'm going to save further remarks and open it up to the rest of the council during new business. Thank you. Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, President Colon. And before I say anything else, I did want to just add to the comments on Mr. Felser, who has been a huge help and leader to the implementation of our climate action plan, our focus on sustainability, the idea that we're not making decisions just for now, but 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 years from now, and also for people that are not yet to call Bethlehem home. And I think Mr. Felser has been a huge part of both the when I first introduced it back in January of 2017. He has been a big advocate and supporter and been involved in that process throughout, so I'm certainly happy to see his voice, one of looking forward and sustainability for everybody throughout the city to be added back on to another term there. So thank you for that. I do have several reports, but first we have two administrative orders. And the first one is I hereby appoint Jennifer Kirchner, 239 9th Avenue, Bethlehem, PA, 18018, to the Sister City Commission. This appointment is effective through January 2027.
Administrative order for Jennifer Kirchner, Sister City Commission, resolution sponsored by Ms. Leone and Ms. Kliatak.
Discussion? We'll call the roll.
Ms. Kramsey Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Kliatak?
Aye.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
Ms. Leone?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
And Mr. Colon?
Aye. Passes 6-0.
Thank you. And I hereby appoint John Rivera, 351 Lena Circle, apartment 402, Fogelsville, Pennsylvania, 18051, to the Sister City Commission. And this appointment is effective through January 2027.
Administrative order for John Rivera to the Sister City Commission. Resolution sponsored by Ms. Leone and Ms. Kliatak.
Discussion? Ms. Leone?
Quick question about the Sister City Commission. Was it going to be growing because we're considering another Sister City partnership, or does the commission remain the same size throughout?
We have not had the conversation yet. Sister City Commission, like most of ours, relies on these volunteers, the Sister City Commission more so than many, to host people coming to America and things like that. So that's usually the big kind of motivating factor in who gets appointed. But, you know, we absolutely can take a look at that and I'll have a conversation with Ms. Santoro about the size of the Sister City Commission going forward.
I think I heard that you mentioned he lives, I think, in Fogelsville. Mm-hmm. Is it a requirement for these commissions to live in Bethlehem, or is it preferred? How does that work?
Not for the Sister City Commission. That is one where the requirement is not that you need to live in Bethlehem. Some of our boards, authorities, commissions either have particular restrictions as far as if you could have a business or you could live here. Some of them have none in particular. And, you know, I'll be honest, as the Sister City Commission is, we're looking for volunteers in or out of the city that are willing to do a lot of the work and host and things like that. But the Sister City Commission is not one. And this is also one that we rely on the people that are currently on the Sister City Commission to also offer recommendations. But as always, as with every commission board authority we have, we will also obviously take recommendations from anybody else.
Any other discussion from members of council? We'll call the roll.
Ms. Kramsey Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Kliatak?
Aye.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
Ms. Leone?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
And Mr. Colon?
Aye. Passes 6-0.
Thank you. Several things. First of all, we had a couple of fantastic Martin Luther King Jr. events yesterday. One was the parade to the memorial that's been going on now for 33 years, and then also the NAACP sponsored one at Church and Nativity, and I would say after coming to or going to those for many years that yesterday was one of the better attended. And I think the message of hope and social justice was one that was inspiring, and both of them were centered around our youth. And it was, I know there were several council members there as well, and I just wanted to publicly thank the organizers of both events who just did a fantastic job, I think, of focusing the day on not just a celebration of Dr. King's life, but also what can we do to carry on that legacy going forward. A couple other things. One is we just a couple updates as far as public safety is concerned. I know council had supported the addition of those paramedics in the 2024 budget. Today, I was told that we hired the two supervisors. So that was that's a big step forward. Oftentimes, as we've talked about, it's one thing to be able to allocate the money or locate the money. It's another thing to be actually be able to find and hire the people. So we were very happy about that. So we are currently doing interviews for the paramedic positions. But we are confident we're going to be able to fill those in a couple of weeks, which, as we said, will cut down on response times, will make our paramedics more accessible to the residents of Bethlehem, and I want to thank City Council for supporting that investment. Also, on Thursday, according to Chief Aki, we have our 8 firefighters that we hired in the budget. They are showing up, I believe, Thursday is their first day of work, Chief Aki. So that's another one of those things is, you know, it's always about the details. And, you know, we send out offers, but when you send out the offers, you don't know whether or not they're going to get offers from other fire departments, because oftentimes people are applying to other places. So even if you send it, but you can't send out more offers than you have spots, because if everybody says yes, you obviously have a problem. So the bottom line is we're very happy that we went 8 for 8. And we sent out 8 offers, and we hired 8 people, and they show up on Thursday, and that took a lot of work. So they're here for a couple days, and then most of them, depending on what certifications they already have, are off to the fire academy, and we're excited about them joining. And then also our applications are up for the police department, as I think you probably know. We generally go send people in January and in June. This is kind of the first step. So we have our accepted applications, and then we have the physical fitness assessment, then we have the written examination, then they certify the civil service test, and then they pass the background check, and they would be hired by the police department. So I believe that we now have 5 in the academy that started in January that then would go through that 6-month academy. I think they graduate in June, and then they would start with us. But we're working through that list to be able to send, and we will have at least 5 openings. We have 5 openings right now, but obviously with that list or us sending people twice a year, if somebody retires a month from now, then we would have 6 openings. So then the goal is obviously to be able to fill all of them by, we never really get to the point where we're at exactly the amount of officers. Because in order for that to happen, you would need no officers to retire or leave between in a 6-month period, that's from January to June. But we're pretty much down to 1 cycle now, which we've done by adding, I believe, over the past 18 months to 2 years, I think the number is around 21, 22, 23 that we've hired through these different cycles. So, you know, we'll go through that process. But we were really happy that we had, in January of 2023, the total amount of applicants we had was 119. In January of 2024, we had 193. It's something that the police department, our HR director, Michelle Sahaki, who does a fantastic job, and the administration have worked a lot at. But once again, it's the grind to be able to do a lot of different things. So we were excited about those increase in numbers, and that's something we wanted to report. January 24th, I think Ms. Satullo probably sent you, we're having our opening doors community meeting over at Northampton Community College, room 605, where we're going to kind of talk about a lot of those affordable housing strategies that we spent so much time talking about with a lot of our community partners that are doing the real work on the front lines. But that is an open invitation to everybody. And I think, as we talked about last year, what our plan with the opening doors initiative is to have these regular community meetings throughout the year. Some things in affordable housing we can move on quicker than others, but a lot of times it takes a while to be able to acquire the funding, to be able to acquire the land, to be able to work with different partners, to be able to do with the to instill the programs that we want to. So we think it's important to be having these meetings. We haven't decided exactly how many of these community meetings we're going to have, but we're thinking some are quarterly, some are that will allow different people to be able to present on different issues and things like that. And then just two more things. One is, we obviously, when we talk about our budget, it is the best numbers we can do as far as when we put it out, but we are happy to report that nothing crazy happened in December. And I know one of the big things, obviously, because we're self-insured, we talked during both of my budget address and then also during the hearings about us being ahead on the medical, you know, without anything coming in, but we got through December 31st without any unexpected bills coming through. So we did finish ahead there. So that's a good start to 2024. And then I guess I would just finish with a couple comments on Bishop Glennon, who, you know, I had the pleasure of knowing for a long time. He really did represent the best of our community. And, you know, I got to know him years ago. When he was working through Moravian University, and my father had gotten sick, and he had been a real resource on a personal level for our family. And, you know, I couldn't tell you how many conversations I had with Hopeton in public, in his office, in my office, on the phone, about a lot of different things. And, you know, he was obviously the Central Moravian representative on the World Heritage Council, which I am the chairman of. And, you know, we had a lot of conversations about what World Heritage means, and what it is about for our community. And, you know, Bishop Glennon worked at Central Moravian, but it was clear from any conversation you could ever have with him, is that he cared about everybody. And he looked at being a Christian and being a leader as not about himself. He never wanted to pat himself on the back. He never bought into the idea that he was anybody special, or that he was in part of any special group or any special club. It's not the way he looked at his service. He looked at it as, what can we do for everybody? And everybody was equal in the city of Bethlehem, no matter what neighborhood they lived in. Whether they lived in a neighborhood that was struggling or a neighborhood that was affluent, he looked at everybody as being important. And, you know, we've often talked that, you know, one of our responsibilities is, once we have ours, to work on helping other people get theirs. And that was, he led his life that way. And he lived his life in a way that, you know, I was, and I often don't use this word, but I was often pretty jealous of the way he was able to respond to difficult situations, oftentimes when people were being selfish or they were only looking out for themselves. And he was able to look at it not in a way where he had to say that. He just kind of had a way with him, a way of him, where he could kind of just say the perfect thing in the perfect room, where everybody knew exactly what he meant, and everyone left feeling a little bit brighter and more inspired. And through that process of World Heritage, we've talked a lot, and there's a lot of focus on what World Heritage could mean for us, for tourism or people coming, but it's a celebration of our values. It's a celebration of the idea of community, of what the Moravians were about, as far as access and opportunity. And he really wanted it to be that, and it's going to be that. And in a lot of meetings, he would often be the ones that raise his hand, and he would say, what does this mean for everybody in our city? He would ask difficult questions that other people didn't ask, like, what does this mean for housing affordability in our city? What does this mean for the celebration of welcoming new people into our city? And, you know, we've often talked about how we're a city of people that have just gotten here and a city of people that have been here for a long time. And that's great. We need both of them. And Hopeton was somebody that was not born here. And he came here and he walked into one of the most tradition-filled places you could have in the city of Bethlehem. And he did it in a way that he understood that he was new, but the values and the qualities that he brought to that job and that he brought to humanity and life were universal. And we could not find a better person or a better leader. And, you know, there's a lot of people that are around City Hall and around our community that are heartbroken right now. And, you know, his service is on Saturday, and, you know, there's just a lot of people, and I just happen to have the microphone right now, but there's I think thousands of people that have similar stories they could tell about Bishop Glennon, who was, you know, as he would say, all will be well. And, you know, he never wanted it to be about himself, and he would probably hate the fact that I've just spent 5 minutes talking about him, but he deserves a lot more than that. And the best thing I can say is that he cared about everybody. That should be the mission of all of us. And, you know, I think every time somebody in the city looks out for somebody other than themselves or sees the big picture or cares about the community, it will be invoking his spirit. And he was an inspiration to all of us, and he will continue to be an inspiration going forward. Thank you, President Cologne.
Thank you, Mayor Reynolds. We don't have any ordinances for final passage this evening, nor any new ordinances. Moving on to resolutions, the clerk will read Resolution 10A.
Be resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem that the Mayor and the Controller and or such other city officials as deemed appropriate by the City Solicitor are hereby authorized to execute all documents and agreements with SC Engineers Incorporated. Resolution sponsored by Ms. Leon and Ms. Kwiatek.
Discussion? We'll call the roll.
Mr. Ramsey Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
Ms. Leon?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
And Mr. Cologne?
Aye. Passes 6-0. Resolution 10B.
Be it resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem, the Mayor and the Controller, and or such other city officials deemed appropriate by the City Solicitor are hereby authorized to execute all documents and agreements with Gannett Fleming Valuation Rate Consultants, LLC. Resolution sponsored by Ms. Leon and Ms. Kwiatek.
Discussion? We'll call the roll.
Ms. Ramsey Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
Ms. Leon?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
And Mr. Cologne?
Aye. Passes 6-0. Resolution 10C.
Be it resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem that the Mayor and the Controller and or such other city officials deemed appropriate by the City Solicitor are hereby authorized to execute all documents and agreements with Colliers Engineering and Design Incorporated. Resolution sponsored by Ms. Leon and Ms. Kwiatek.
Discussion? Ms. Kwiatek?
Mr. Buscola, just a quick question about this. This is for the GIS mapping. Can you give us a little more detail about what exactly this is mapping? Is it the system itself? Is it the meters? What is the GIS mapping for?
It's a GIS, that's our geographic information system. It's a software platform that, if you're familiar with those, they're maps that show all of our utilities, so water, sewer, and stormwater. And this is the second phase of a multi-phase project to upgrade that platform. So the first phase was upgrade the software to a more current software package. This phase is going to involve a lot of legwork in some respects in getting all of our data that's currently on paper or in other electronic format, or actually going out in the field and verifying what is actually in the field gets correctly loaded onto the GIS platform. So they're going to be doing that for water, sewer, and the stormwater system. And then once that's finished, then we should have a nice clean sort of mapping of where our underground infrastructure is.
That sounds very important.
Yes.
And I'm glad to hear that, you know, that things are being sort of brought into the 21st century in terms of things that are on paper and in old defunct systems and things like that. And just sort of harkening back to the water main break, the most recent one, that is a very serious one in terms of the structural integrity of the church, from what I understand. And if you could just address, in just thinking about the mapping and things, it just made me think about that. You know, sort of how old our water mains are, what our process is for kind of keeping an eye on things.
Well, the GIS will help us, you know, understand what's in the ground. We also have information. It also will capture the historical information of when was a main replaced, how old it is. Go on the map and see, okay, this line was installed in 1920, this was installed in 1950, this was replaced, and so forth, so on. So it's a database that will help us going forward to help manage our system. So what we need to replace mains going forward and long into the future. Just generally speaking, underground infrastructure is, as you can imagine, extensive. It's under every street just about in the city. It's very expensive to replace all that. It's just, we just do not have the money right now to replace everything that needs to be replaced. It's going to be a multi-decade effort to replace all that stuff. If you just think of the water system in particular, a lot of our stuff was started to be installed 100 years ago. So it's going to take decades to start replacing all that stuff. So this is just one piece of the puzzle to help us understand where everything is, how old it is, and then it helps us develop a sort of a capital plan going forward to start tracking, you know, where the main breaks are, how old is the pipe, and to start prioritizing where those water mains that need to be replaced get replaced over a period of time.
Before they break. In other words, to be proactive and to,
yes,
to
try to be
ahead
proactive.
Ahead of things, yeah.
To the extent possible.
Right. Understood. Thank you.
Mr. Reynolds, did you want to elaborate on that question?
Yeah, just a couple of things to add to that is, you know, one of the things that, you know, is clear is that as that system wasn't just built out over 100 years, there was no real uniformity in as far as like what areas have different types of pipes. And it has been incredibly difficult to be able to track, and this is a huge step in the right direction. I did want to just add on to your point about moving into the 21st century. There's a lot that we still need to do. And, you know, I was talking with Ms. Collins. The health department uses GIS a lot. We use inspections through GIS within Ms. Collins' department. This is a big step forward. It is one of those things that if, you know, we would like to be able to do more of that. I think everybody had approved the digitization in Ms. Collins' department that will cut down on, you know, as I often say, Mr. Tool's office looks like one of those old family doctors where you just like pull the different slides. And we're moving in the right direction, but it's going to take a long time. And there's just so much paper. And for 100 years, we were just, the way we kept records was just, we want to keep these files over here. So we are trying to do as much as we can. We probably at some point need to do more from a systemic point of view as far as our IT department is concerned. It's one of those things that obviously we talked a lot about public safety, but it's just going to come down to one of those things. Our rate of being able to do that's going to come down to how many people we have in these departments going forward. And that's going to be just a decision for us in the future years. Because the more people we have that can work on this, and one of the things I've learned too is obviously a lot with technology takes a lot up front, but then it creates these efficiencies over the long term that allows us then to be able to move employees into other places. So it's a conversation that we constantly have about, you know, when do we want to make those large investments? When do we want to necessarily add people? How do we want to take advantage of the technology that exists to modernize? Because right now the fact that we don't have, and I will say we are more modern in the way we use technology than our other peer cities, but there's a long way to go until we get to that point where we can say we're doing things as efficiently as we can using technology. And I think it's one of the goals we have as part of the Harvard Bloomberg cohort that I'm a part of is how do we become data-driven? How do we rely on trends? I think one of the things we often talk about as well is people have individual experiences or they have thoughts, but we need to be able to use data to be able to collect everybody's experience, to be able to set those trends, especially when you're making multi-million dollar investments. So we're on that path, but I just wanted to just take a minute to say there is a lot of work to do, but this is a big step forward for us.
Any other discussion for Ms. Cramsey-Smith?
I have a question related to that, Mr. Boscola. So I know nothing is full truth, but with this system, is it going to give us some indication, like if we're looking at a break may occur or if there's other concerns with the pipes or any kind of issues?
The GIS in and of itself let me rephrase that.
It's not a predictive.
It can be a bit of a predictive device. You know, just like the mayor said, you're the more data you have, the smarter you get in terms of where, you know, what you have underground, what's the condition of the pipe, how old it is. So in some respect, and you know, where your main break frequency occurs. So yes, in some respects, it can become a predictive device to help us prioritize what water mains to replace. Because, you know, you have 500, we have 500 miles of water mains. You can't replace them all at once. But these type of platforms and systems will help us focus by collecting all this data that says, okay, this street, you know, we have an old water main, we have a lot of main breaks, here's the data that says this street is more important than this street over here, so this one's going to get replaced. So in that respect, yes, it can be a predictor.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. Any other questions from members of council? Mr. Miller, call the roll.
Ms. Ramsey Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Layard?
Aye.
Ms. Leon?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
And Mr. Colon?
Aye. Passes 6-0. Resolution 10D.
Be it resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem that the Mayor and the Comptroller and or such other city officials as deemed appropriate by the City Solicitor are hereby authorized to execute all documents and agreements with KSAND. Resolution is sponsored by Ms. Leon and Ms. Kwiatek.
Discussion? We'll call the roll.
Ms. Ramsey Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
Ms. Leon?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
And Mr. Colon?
Aye. Passes 6-0. Resolution 10D.
Be it resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem that the Mayor and the Comptroller and or such other city officials deemed appropriate by the City Solicitor are hereby authorized to execute all documents and agreements with LVL Engineering Group. Resolution is sponsored by Ms. Leon and Ms. Kwiatek.
Discussion? Ms. Laird?
Just a question about the plan. I'm very excited to see the replacement of some of those boards included. And I was just wondering if it specifies a paved recreation path. Wasn't sure if the purpose for the paving of that path, that I'm thinking of water flowing down to the Monocacy, is for accessibility purposes, biking, or if any other materials have been considered that could be more pervious than a paved path.
Yeah, obviously this is the 8-foot-wide path, so it's not a significant amount of impervious area that could impact the creek, the water quality, or runoff from a runoff perspective. The overriding factor for the material selected is long-term maintenance. If you have a screening path, you're constantly having to maintain it, and I know we've had trouble doing that in other places, keeping up with it. So the thought is that if you, the lower the maintenance, the more successful that project is, and the more use and less labor that would be devoted to it in order to maintain it in good condition for use for the applying public.
Thank you.
Ms. Wilhelm?
I have a materials question as well, and just thank you so much for the work that's happened already. It really just makes it so much more user-friendly. But with regard to safety and accessibility, specifically with regard to the footbridge planks, I was curious to know, because it gets quite slick when it's wet. Now it's wood. I was just curious to know what materials are being considered there.
At this preliminary stage, the thought was to replace in kind with another wood structure, but when we do the design, we would certainly take those factors into consideration.
Okay. Great. So not decided yet, but
yes.
Thank you.
Any other discussion from members of council? Ms. Ramsey Smith?
I just have a quick question. I see it's going to include the ADA ramps, and I'm just wondering, I'm assuming the surface will then be hopefully accessible for, like, carriages, wheelchairs, anything that people with disabilities...
Yeah, at the appropriate locations. I mean, that's specifically referring to at intersections, crossings, that sort of thing, yes.
But how about the whole path? What's the material going to be like on the ground for the whole entire path?
Most of the path is bituminous pavement. Except for the wooden structure.
Okay, thank you.
Any other discussion from members of council? Thank you, Mr. Arbo. We'll call the roll.
Ms. Ramsey Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
Ms. Leon?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
And Mr. Colon?
Aye. Passes 6-0. Resolution 10F.
Be it resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem, the Mayor and the Comptroller and or such other city officials deemed appropriate by the City Solicitor are hereby authorized to execute all documents and agreements with Dewey Engineering Incorporated. The resolution is sponsored by Ms. Leon and Ms. Kwiatek.
Discussion? We'll call the roll.
Ms. Ramsey Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Laird? Aye.
Ms. Leon?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
And Mr. Cologne?
Aye. Passes 6-0. Resolution 10G.
Be resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem, the Mayor and the Controller endorse such other city officials as deemed appropriate by the city solicitor. Are hereby authorized to execute all documents and agreements with Traffic Planning and Design Incorporated. The resolution is sponsored by Ms. Leon and Ms. Kwiatek.
Discussion? Ms. Wilhelm?
I was curious, actually, two questions. One with regard to what Ms. Lysowski shared earlier. Are there plans for floating curb bump outs? Are bike lanes anticipated on this part of Broad Street?
I have made that suggestion to the project team to consider. And obviously, we have not started the design work. And once we do, that would be something that we would consider. And if it's feasible and if you know effective, I'm sure that's what we would, that's the path we'll take.
Excellent. And I know this second question, I know this isn't part of your purview per se, but also have conversations, or do we anticipate conversations with Lanta on improved bus stations, covered bus stations, just knowing that the co-op market is there and the YMCA. I think there's a stop near the co-op, although I'm not sure about YMCA. Is there any potential for improved bus stops, covered stations?
I will make note of that.
Okay.
And we'll make sure we focus on that.
Great, thank you.
Ms. Blair?
One, I'm extremely excited to see this work getting underway along the length of Broad Street. And I was wondering, as you get into the design phase and consider these specifics, have you and will you be connecting with the Northside Alive, Northside 2027 team to, because I'm thinking of the fact that they have like a walkability committee that has done walking audits and things like that in the neighborhood that this would be running through this specific stretch.
I mean, I'm sure we'd welcome coordination and communication. I think there's probably been some input into this project already. This project specifically is pretty far along at this point. We're about ready to pursue the final design, but we could certainly revisit items that may be appropriate.
I was thinking of those fine details, like the bump outs and things like that. Right, like talking about or the streetscapes that were on here. I know that there was some talk about murals and planting.
We talked about possible additional public meetings per se, but we'll make those decisions once we get the project underway.
Mr. Reynolds, did you want to elaborate on Ms. Laird's question?
Yeah, I just wanted to add a couple things. Mr. Alcohol is great. Ms. Laird, this is a conversation that I've had as well, that the way that we engineer these things versus the way they literally feel, oftentimes those details can come down to, like, where does the bump out go? How far is the... So what I had asked him with both this and obviously with West Broad Street is to be able to be, once we have that kind of engineering done, to like go out into the field, to have an understanding of like what it would literally mean before we actually continue that process forward. And that's certainly something that we can bring Northside, bring in that Northside Alive committee on. I think one of the things that we have tried to do as much as possible is bring together our planning folks and our engineering folks into the same conversation. Because, Mr. Alcohol is brilliant and sees the world in a way that I can't with math that I don't always understand. And then also, we are often in a lot of these meetings where people ask these very legitimate questions about, like, why is the bump out there or not there? And as not somebody that's a public engineer, I don't know those answers. To be able to bring these worlds together, to be able to have that conversation on both East Broad and West Broad is super important. Because, one of the things we have now, as we've talked about, we have more people walking than I think we ever have before. We have more people biking than ever have before. And all of the trends continue to be that we're going to see more and more of that going into the future. When we take a look at both West Broad and East Broad, and you hear from people in these neighborhoods, they talk about how valuable it is to be able to bike and walk, and that's how they want to get downtown or across our city. And we need to get it right, because we very much look at what we're doing here as hopefully a precursor to be able to do this work in other areas of our city to be able to make it even walkable and bikeable. So, getting those details right, I've probably asked Mr. Alcohol that question 5 different times, but I will make sure at the appropriate time, as much as we can, that we get the right people involved for those type of planning details.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other questions from members of council? Ms. Quietek?
I just want to echo Ms. Lasowski's sentiment about bike lane on the east side of this project, because when the original plan came out, the bike lane plan was just for the west side, and the thinking was that when people got into the center of Broad Street downtown, that they would sort of veer off onto Market or one of the other streets that runs parallel to Broad, and I disagreed with that as a concept, because I think, again, if we're trying to really have streets that are for everybody, not just for cars, we want to make it as smooth and frictionless as possible for cyclists to be able to stay on a route, and it's my firm belief that having that east-west route is sort of the beginning of really creating a bikeable city, that we need it out in east-west, hopefully on, we have the greenway for part of the south side, but hopefully I would love to see east-west on both sides of the river and north-south, at least one good north-south transit for cyclists. So I will just add my vote to having a bike lane on the east end of Broad Street as well. Thank you.
Any other discussion from members of council? I'll just thank Mr. Alcohol for your responsiveness. I know we had heard some suggestions and comments a couple weeks ago now, and that were forwarded to council, and I know you and your deputy have acknowledged them to me, and I appreciate you taking suggestions that come from anyone in the room to the project team, and as you work out design, I know there's a lot to be considered, so I appreciate all your attention to the feedback that comes through. We'll call the roll.
Ms. Ramsey Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Quietek?
Aye.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
Ms. Leung?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
And Mr. Cologne?
Aye. Passes 6-0. Resolution 10-H.
Be it resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem, the Mayor and the Controller, and or such other city officials as deemed appropriate by the City Solicitor, are hereby authorized to execute all documents and agreements with Brendan Stanton Incorporated, doing business as BSI Electrical Contractors. Resolution sponsored by Ms. Leung and Ms. Quietek.
Discussion? We'll call the roll.
Ms. Gramsci Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Quietek?
Aye.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
Ms. Leung?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
And Mr. Cologne?
Aye. Passes 6-0. And Resolution 10-I.
Be it resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem that the foregoing councilman appointment of Stephanie J. Stewart as solicitor to the City Council be executed by the President of Council. Resolution sponsored by Ms. Leung and Ms. Quietek.
I'm going to open up discussion before I turn it over to any members of council for input. I will recognize that Attorney Stewart is here with us this evening, as she has been for a few previous council meetings. So as it relates, I'll give a little bit of history now. I wasn't here literally anywhere back when the City Council had its first solicitor in the mid-80s, when City Council first broke away from the City Solicitor's Office to have its own attorney representing City Council in these legal issues and advising council. So this would only be, I believe, the sixth, if I'm not mistaken, City Council solicitor in the last close to 40 years that City Council has had a solicitor. First, I'll just address a couple comments as relates to the process, because of course those are relevant, but I'll say that it's the City Council solicitor, just like the city clerk, works at the discretion of City Council. We are not bound to any process. I've been on council for about a decade now, coming to all council meetings for over a decade. This will be the third appointment that I've either witnessed or been a part of, and honestly, they've all been handled differently. I'm not up here saying which was right, which was wrong, other than it's the will of council to appoint any council solicitor that they wish to. And tonight we have Attorney Stewart on the resolution on the agenda. I will say Attorney Stewart comes with a remarkable background in her municipal work. I will say that Attorney Stewart was someone who I was not greatly familiar with before our previous council solicitor, who I'll remind everyone was successful in his election to the Northampton County Court of Common Pleas, as Mr. Brian Pinnell is now
the Honorable Judge Ryan Pinella, and that is where this vacancy stems from and why it was created. Attorney Stewart is someone who works in the same law office as Attorney Pinella, so I think that continuity is very important and one of the criteria as we evaluate who will be continuing on to advise us as our counsel solicitor. And given just the communications we've had, I know you've reached out to all members of counsel individually. Attorney Stewart and I had an opportunity to have a few discussions, and I really thank her for her interest in serving as the city council solicitor, and I will be supporting it this evening. Thank you. And I will open it up to any other discussion from members of council.
Everything you said, and I will add, I had the opportunity to speak with Attorney Stewart on the phone at length, and in addition to her extraordinary and relevant experience, it was a pleasure to speak with her and learn a little bit more about the heart and mind she has toward public service based on her own experience in social services prior to her experience in law, and I also look forward to supporting her appointment with my vote tonight.
Any other discussion from members of council? Ms. Francie Smith?
I just want to add the same. I know Attorney Stewart and the firm she's with are held in very, very high positive regard, especially within municipal law, and they are the go-to firm from what people tell me as far as municipal law, and I think we're really honored and blessed to have her come on board with us as part of our team. And what I know of her also professionally and personally, for many people who've worked with her over the years, is just really just hold her in very high esteem regard. So we're, I can say myself, I'm really grateful that you're on board with us and welcome.
Ms. Quintet?
Thank you. I think one of the things that stood out to me with Attorney Stewart's resume was the level of research that she has done, particularly with regard to municipal affairs, and I really look forward to being able to tap into that. Very often when we think of ideas and things we might want to do, it's really, we need that keen research eye to help us understand better how it fits in with our current ordinances, with our, responsibility to the state, to the Commonwealth's laws and things like that. So I really appreciate that you have such a background in that, that she has such a background in that. I'm sorry, I'm just looking at her. So that's how it came out, but thank you.
Any other discussion? And I'll just remind everyone that our city council solicitor is exactly that, the city council solicitor, not the council president solicitor. And I encourage, as always, all council members to use our resources as it relates to our wonderful city clerks and our city council solicitor. And if there is no more discussion from council, we'll call the roll.
Ms. Cramsey Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Quiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
Ms. Leung?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
And Mr. Colon?
Aye. Passes 6-0. Welcome, Attorney Stewart. And our last resolution tonight, Resolution 10J.
Certificate of Appropriateness under the provisions of the Act of the Pennsylvania Legislature, Bethlehem Resolution, is hereby granted for 4 wall signs and 2 neon open signs already installed at the rear of the property fronting on Shawnee Street for an auto detailing business at 310 Broadhead Avenue. The resolution is sponsored by Ms. Leon and Ms. Kwiatek.
Discussion on the COA? We'll call the roll.
Ms. Cramsey Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
Ms. Leung?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
And Mr. Colon?
Aye. Passes 6-0. New business. First, I just wanted to make an announcement that City Council is going to be getting the Committee of the Whole together for a meeting on Monday, January 29th, 2024 at 6 p.m. here in Town Hall. And then that Committee of the Whole meeting will have one agenda item, and it's going to be to talk about the Walnut Street parking garage project and all its different factors and angles and everything involved with the project as a whole. So again, that's going to be Monday, January 29th, here at 6 p.m. in Town Hall. No votes will be taken, but it will just be to go over information regarding the Walnut Street parking garage. Before I open it up to other members of council, I did just want to, again, elaborate on Bishop Clennon, and I appreciate Mayor Reynolds' comments, and then we'll open it up to anyone else who wants to make comments. I didn't grow up Moravian or really any involvement, especially with the church, but I met Bishop Clennon through my role on city council. He and I got to be in the same room a number of times for different city projects and things that were going on, community events, things like that. Really just got to know him in passing and talked to him in passing. Didn't really get to know him super well at first as a person. And I'm going to share two stories that really made an impact not only on me but my family. So Bishop Clennon and his wife, along with my wife Erin and I, were seated together at a community event one time. And again, I knew him in passing, he knew me because of my role in council. It really ended there. I had never really met his wife previously, nor had he met my wife, but we were all sitting there, we were talking. And if anyone knows me by name, you know two things about me. Second is, I love talking about Bethlehem. And first is, I love talking about my daughter. And my wife had just recently told me that we were having a daughter, or a baby, but we hadn't shared it with anyone. No one knew, just my wife and I. And Bishop Clennon and I and our wives were seated there, and there was a child, probably about 4 years old, at the table across from us. And my wife and I could not help but to just kind of project our thoughts of parenthood and things like that. And Bishop Clennon and his wife commented a couple times throughout the lunch, you go, oh, you two are ready. Oh, we could see it in your eye. Just made a comment, boy, you're gonna be good. And it took everything more in me. My wife's pretty, she's a safe box, but more in me to not go, we're having a baby. But it was something that we left there just elated at the prospect and just the kind words and observations that Bishop Clennon and his wife had made in their observation, and just kind of, at the time, teasing us, but it meant a lot more to us than that. And then you fast forward a number of months later, Bishop Clennon and I and my wife had an opportunity to meet with him in private and discuss our daughter and some of the things that were going on with her. And he gave us a strong message of hope, a strong message of love, and a strong message of what it means to persevere as parents and what it means to address things that come at you. And that's something that will never be lost on us. And that will never be forgotten, not only by me, but my family. And we're just one couple of countless in the city that had remarkable experiences with Bishop Clennon. So we wish him and his family all the best moving forward. And I'll open it up to other members of council for comment. Ms. Leon?
For comment on that or for just business in general?
New business. This is new business.
I don't mean to shift so abruptly from that. I didn't know the bishop personally, so I don't have any anecdotes other than the fact that he seemed to be a good man and a man of God, but I did have some other things that I wanted to say under new business, and one was that I had the privilege of attending an event at Lisenberg House. The mayor was there as well as Councilwoman Cramsey, so if I miss anything, feel free to hit it up after me. But they were announcing a program, a property tax rebate program. It's something that Representative Samuelson has worked very hard on. Well, I think it was both of our reps, Representative Samuelson and McNeil. This is something that would help a lot of people who are on a fixed income. They have raised the income requirement for applying for this program, and they have increased the minimum rebate that you would get through this program. So if you are on a fixed income and you are struggling with any type of the real estate tax or the rent program, please reach out to your state reps. Our senators were there as well. So any of them, the website is pa.gov/PTRR. One of the residents at Lisenberg House said stuck with me. She said, I can continue living as I am in my community. So if these are programs that are available that can help people on a fixed income, I think that would be something that's beneficial for our community. I also wanted to give a big bravo Zulu to Officer Burton and K-9 Bean for amazing work they did last week reuniting a family member or a young man with his family. And since you brought up the committee meeting that's coming up, I think I would like to just ask that we get all the information possible regarding this meeting. Maybe we can coordinate with the clerk's office. I know that there was an email that came out. I saw a lot of information in there that I can't wait to dig into, but anything else would be helpful, anything that has to do with like maybe the first time the garage was built, how that was financed, maybe how that discussion went. Going through, I had some questions about how the HARB meetings went, so maybe we could review the HARB ordinance or just send it to us or something. And they proposed quite a few different options, so wondering if there's a financial implication to if we go with one option or another, and if city council would have to get involved at any point with financing options. So those are just some thoughts I had.
And I'll just interject real quick, Ms. Leung, that we, I know Ms. Collins and I had briefly had a discussion about really just sending as much information as possible through the clerk's office to council for review, and that request still stands. And Ms. Collins started sending some information today, and I can coordinate with our city clerks about sending out relevant ordinances or things that we have in the council office that might be relevant to the conversation for the committee of the whole meeting. Mayor Reynolds, do you want to elaborate on that?
Just to add to Councilman Leonis, I think Ms. Collins, just for the point of everybody else, basically sent just kind of a summary of all of the public conversations that have occurred over the past 6 years that have helped to get to the point in 2024. I think the project, obviously, and what to do with Long Street Garage goes through multiple administrations, councils, parking authorities, and it goes back to 2018. There's a lot of information there. But all of the information that Ms. Collins has shared is basically just a summary of what is already public and things like that. So just in case people hear the word information and they don't know what it means just a summary of the links of public meetings that have already occurred on this topic over the past 6 years.
Any other new business from members of council? Ms. Cramsey-Smith?
Yes, I just wanted to ask Mr. Bosco or Mr. Alcoa, I'm not sure what, I don't know how much you can tell us about the status of the break on Market Street that affected specifically the church, because I know the church members are really concerned, because it sounds like it could be a while until they know the status, but I'm just, you know, also concerned about all the other surrounding buildings, if you could give us an update.
Sure. So there's a break on East Market December 26th, day after Christmas. It was on the lateral to the fire hydrant, which is right in front of the church. It was repaired that day. The church suffered substantial damage. People from our codes office were there. The structural engineer showed up that day as well. The church did suffer significant damage. Believe they're still waiting to get feedback from the structural evaluation to determine the level of damage and what the repair looks like, and then it's a question for the church of how they deal with that with insurance and so forth.
Was this the first time, or were there multiple water main breaks in the same area, and are there any issues as far as sinkholes in the area?
Yes, there were. That section of street has had problems over the past several years. That's what prompted us to replace the water main on that street back in 2022. Unfortunately, when you replace the water main, which runs down the center of the street, you're not necessarily replacing all the laterals. You're just running a new main next to the old main, and then if their laterals are in good shape, you're just disconnecting the lateral from the old main and connecting it to the new main. In this case, the lateral to the fire hydrant looked like it was a good pipe. It was just reconnected to the new main, and that's that old section of pipe to the hydrant is what broke. Going forward, because of the history of problems on that street, we're looking into hiring a geotechnical consultant to do some scans on that street to see what kind of other problems might be lurking underneath in terms of voids, soft spots, sinkhole possibilities. Because I know in the past some other houses have been damaged with prior water main breaks.
Is there any time frame on when that will occur, how long that will take?
I would say sometime this spring, probably, with this winter spring is when that would happen.
Okay, thank you.
Any other new business from members of council? Ms. Laird?
One comment I have is actually about a public comment from last meeting. It was our reorganizational meeting, and but there were also public comments on a wide range of topics. And in the sharing of one particular idea, a resident chose to imitate an ethnic accent as part of an anecdote. And I'm always grateful to residents coming to these meetings, taking time to share, whether it's praise, concern, ideas, but I felt it should be noted that mockery never makes a point stronger, and that sort of intolerant and disrespectful behavior really casts a shadow on the valuable work and the discourse within these chambers. I know our city is better than that one comment, but it was disheartening to have to address that incident with the group of Girl Scouts that had come to that meeting that night. So I have a request that, you know, please bring ideas. I'd love to see even more people in this room share concerns, voice criticisms, but please keep in mind that a public forum should be welcoming for all of our neighbors and voice those thoughts without causing harm. So that was, I didn't know whether that went in old business or new, but this is when most people talk, so there it is. Then I had a question, an informational question about Ms. McCool's invitation to the town meeting, or town hall meeting. Am I allowed to ask that now, or do I just follow up after the meeting?
So typically you would speak to Ms. McCool one-on-one after the meeting.
Okay, I'll connect with you then. Thank you.
Any other new business from members of council? I ask we'll just take a moment of silence in honor of Bishop Clennon before we adjourn. This meeting is adjourned. Get home safely, everyone.